Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Remember, it was not too long ago when online shopping, e-commerce, was seen as something new, something trendy, unique, the latest fad. Well, we have come a long way in a few short years. Earlier this year, as a matter of fact, online shopping, led by Amazon, hit a new milestone, according to the U.S. Commerce Department. For the first time in history, online retailers surpassed the market share of general merchandise, brick-and-mortar stores. Now, with clicks eating up the market share, we want to see how the retail landscape is changing here in Iowa this hour. Just a few minutes, we'll check in with some traditional Iowa retailers to see how they're faring. A little later, we'll talk with Iowa State University economist Dave Swenson with his observations. He's got some data to share with us, I understand. We'll also find out how Amazon is expanding here in the Midwest and here in Iowa from business reporter Catherine Carlin. And hopefully, by the end of the hour, we'll get a sense of where this is all headed. And you, as our listeners, can help us out. Consumers, tell us how much you're clicking when you shop and why, and what you think about when you click instead of walking down or driving to a store. And those of you who work in retail, what's it look like where you are? And what do you see in the future? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. My first guest is Brian Mildenstein. He is the owner of Fin and Feather of Iowa City. I want to make sure you know, Fin and Feather underwrites with Iowa Public Radio. Fin and Feather, for those outside of the Iowa City Cedar Rapids area, is a locally owned hunting, fishing, camping, outdoor store. Brian Mildenstein, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ben. Glad to be here.
We picked you because you are your store, founded by your father and your mother, has been around. When I look at the date, this is your store was around before Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon. 69.
That's possible. Yeah. Before me.
So 1968 is the date your store was founded. Tell us a little bit more about it, what you specialize in, before we get into, to get a sense of it, before we get into a sense of how you've been reacting to online retail.
We specialize in helping people pursue their passions outdoors. Almost anything you can do outside of biking, so any sort of outside recreation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell us, what do you make of this rise in online retail, and how have you been reacting to it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not something we embrace or love, but it is reality for us. So as far as a reaction, I mean, you suggested that it's relatively new, which I guess in the whole scheme of things, it is relatively new to me. It's becoming a more mature business, even though they're still growing at great rates. I think there are brick and mortar stores that are still growing too, although plenty that are suffering as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm looking at Yahoo Finance right now. Store closures. I'm just reading from, this is from an article from yesterday. Store closures have been perhaps the biggest theme in retail in 2019. The so-called retail apocalypse has been ruthless this year, with 7,888 store closures in the U.S. announced so far. That's just so far in this year. We've had big chains go out, Payless, Shoes, Dress Barn, Claire's, completely belly up. I wonder, how have you been reacting to this? I mean, how do you notice it in your store, the rise of online retail?
As far as in the store, I think the biggest thing we notice is something called showrooming. So people coming in to actually put their hands on a product or try something on and then buying it online after that. So mm-hmm. That's something that we don't love.
you can't be happy about that.
Not necessarily trying to run a museum, but but nonetheless, it happens, and that's reality.
Mm-hmm. How do you notice that it happens?
been at this a long time. I mean, there's just a lot of times it's just a sense, but you know that you've really found the product that the person should be buying and in the time frame that they should be buying it, and then there's a sudden switch in behavior usually that indicates I'm just going to think for a while. And some, you know, sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes people come back and actually people want to just do a little more research. And
So, okay, you get a sense of you've really nailed this product for this person. This person really wants it. And then all of a sudden there's a change in behavior that wouldn't have been there 10, 20 years ago where the person says, okay, I mean, do people may probably even come in and just take a picture of something and then go off and try to find
for
it?
For sure. Yeah.
Things like that. How can you combat that as a retailer? Here. Because you're giving them value in that they're experiencing your store, the expertise of you and your salespeople.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times what as a retailer, what you'd like to do is charge for those services, knowing that that would not go over well. We don't do that. But on the other hand, you know, you just try and be better at what you do. You try and provide more unique products that better fit people, provide a service that makes it harder to turn away. It's here, it's now, it's in your hand, it's the right one, feels good. Like, right. You know, what's the hesitation?
Right, and supporting the local economy and the local community is a big thing, isn't it?
For sure, yeah. Again, I ask people when they're at a local event or when they're at something, a fundraiser, or when they're at their school and they're looking at who donated to that event, look around and just see what Amazon gave or see what REI gave or see what any of the online retailers gave to that local event and the ways that they're giving back in your community. Certainly, Amazon could give way more money than we can, but they don't. Not as far as I'm concerned, but so that's one thing, right? It's important for us. We give back to anything kind of outdoors related, so Nature Conservancy type things, or Burroughs Land Trust, or different hunting and fishing concerns, whether it's trout fishing or deer hunting or turkey hunting, those sort of things. So. Anything that provides habitat, access, resources, and then we look at the schools in the community because the community is important, and that's where our people live and shop and choose to be a part of this community. So those are important things for us.
Brian Mildenstein is with us. Just if you've just joined us, owner of Fin and Feather in Iowa City, an outdoor store. We're taking a look at how e-commerce is affecting traditional retailers in the area this hour. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Paul. Paul calling from Iowa City. Hi, Paul. What's your connection here? What are your thoughts? Welcome.
Hi. I'm actually... Ironically, used to work for Brian. Hello, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Good to hear your voice.
Good hearing yours. So we just opened an outdoor store in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, almost a year ago now. Actually, a year ago this coming weekend. And the online stuff, kind of like Brian's been saying, you know, you have a lot of people come in and shop your stuff and then go online and buy it. But the real challenge for us has been getting people to know that we're there. And instead of just going online and buying, you know, Cedar Rapids has not had a outdoor store for quite a few years. And so getting people to know that we're actually there has been our big hurdle that we've had.
Mm-hmm. What is the name of your store, Paul?
It's Philco Outfitters.
Say again, please.
Philco Outfitters.
Philco Outfitters.
We're down in the Czech Village.
Okay, very good. So in your first year of operation, what has surprised you? What are the challenges that you're facing and encountering that perhaps you didn't expect when you opened or ramped up to open a while back?
I think the real difficulty has been, like I said, getting people to know that we're there. You know, 10 years ago, you could have put an ad in one of the local papers. Everybody in town read the paper and everybody would come in. Mm-hmm. Now we've done newspaper ads, we've done radio, we've done basically everything out there to try to get the word out, but people don't really see media. There's just limited people on each form of media right now.
Mm-hmm. How's business going?
It's going well.
Okay. Good. Paul, what do you see in the future? I'm going to ask this of Brian, but I'll ask you first since you're on the line. What do you see in the future as far as the challenge to you of of online retail, e-commerce?
Well, I mean, really, it's almost like continuing to just provide that great service like they do at Fin and Feather and like we do, you know, making sure that we have the knowledge we can give to people and having the product in stock that they can buy. I think that will be our biggest challenge, is making sure that we have the people there working that know their stuff and are able to explain it to customers.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Paul, the owner of a new retail store in Cedar Rapids, an outdoor store. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Okay. Interesting that he's opened up. It's a difficult time. Your family has been in this business, as we mentioned, for over 50 years, Brian. But difficult time to open a new retail store, isn't it?
Oh, sure is. I would not want to be opening a new retail store right now. As much as I like what I do, I think it is a challenging time to dive in.
Mm-hmm. Have there been previous challenges? Maybe this is something that you heard about from your mother and father since they started it over 50 years ago, Fin and Feather. Changes in the retail landscape that were challenges, looked like storms, were storms that you had to weather?
For certain. I mean, over the years, things do change. At some point, you know, there's a rise in maybe catalog sales. For us in particular, there was the mall in Coralville opened, which drove a lot of the retail traffic from central Iowa City to a different area of town. And so that, in and of itself, changed traffic patterns for people, shopping patterns, and always that creates an obstacle, something that you're going to have to overcome. But I think in those scenarios, we tend to try and think about what it is we're trying to do, what we do well, and just do that better. Mm-hmm. And you can't be everything to everyone, and you know, you can't get emotional about not having everyone as your customer, but we still would like everyone to be our customer.
Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Brian Mildenstein with us, the owner of Fin and Feather of Iowa City. Brad is with us in Waukee. Hi, Brad. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just want to say that I usually do my shopping online at night when I'm laying in bed, relaxed, because finding going into traditional brick and mortar stores is either challenging or they don't have what I have, and it's just more relaxing to be away from people and the lines and the frustration. So that's what I choose to do my online shopping, is just in the evening when I can clear my head and just look and browse and think of what I want. And the brick and mortar stores aren't open then, so Amazon is, and so that's why I choose to go that way. Thank you.
Okay, Brad and Waukee, certainly a perspective that a lot of people can echo, Brian, and that's tough. I mean, you can't have people walk in the door, lay down in their own bed and pick out products. There's something that online retail has offering.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you see when you look into the future, Brian? Retail landscape, I mean, this is tough to predict. 5, 10, 20 years in the future, what are you seeing there?
Well, I look at it as more hopeful in some ways, and maybe it's the town that I live in and you know, have my business in. But I certainly am betting on people wanting to be able to walk in and buy something locally. And I think that in and of itself is not going to keep a lot of stores around. I mean, you're going to have to step up your game. You're going to have to do the best you can and provide a good service. And a lot of that might boil down to things that online can't provide.
Mm-hmm. Okay, joining us as well, Ed Kaiser is with us. He's assistant manager of North Grand Mall in Ames. Ed, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
You're in our Ames studio. I see on my notes 23 years of experience in the mall industry. You've been at North Grand Mall for over 2 years now, right?
Correct. Yep. I started back in 97 at the mall and then ran Marshalltown Center and spent 14 years at Merle Hay and then came back as part of the new local ownership team of the mall here in Ames.
Okay. So the big story of 2019 in terms of retail is all these closures. I'm seeing the phrase retail apocalypse. Thousands of store closures across the U.S., some going bankrupt, like Payless Shoes, Dress Barn, Claire's. how are you evaluating the retail landscape right now and the rise of online retail?
Well, I mean, it's tough to see those stores leave the landscape, so to speak. But what Brian was mentioning earlier is it's time, as things are changing, that we as retailers need to step up our game, provide better service, look at things that help serve not only individuals, but the community, how to coexist, possibly bring more entertainment into the mix, and create more of an overall experience for the shopper. It's not about going to the mall and shopping for whatever stuff you're looking to buy. That still happens, but people want an experience. So it's just not good enough for a mall to be a passive place to buy stuff. They have to be an engaging place to do stuff, along with buying stuff that they need.
Mm-hmm. What about this problem for brick and mortar that Brian mentioned? People will come in and, touch the things, look at the product, and then dismiss themselves and go home and buy it online. How do you combat that?
Well, so part of this process is evolving, and it's a constant process. Way back in the late 1800s, when Sears came out with their catalog, it was said that that will be the death of retail. It turns out that the Sears and Roebuck catalog shopping, along with the retail stores, ended up coexisting. That's what is happening here. We are not a retailer. We provide space for the retailers. And what we're seeing is that many retailers, Express Factory Outlet at our mall, the Gap Outlet, TJ Maxx, Kohl's, Maurice's, all of these stores, the Buckle, they track online sales. So they're pretty heavily engaged in online marketing, taking advantage of social media, but they also track where those sales came from regarding zones. Like that person that called in that's in his bed at 1 a.m. because it's convenient for him, just bought something from the Buckle, and he's 11 miles from the North Grand Mall Buckle location. So that sale then gets assigned to the Buckle. It gets shipped out of the Buckle at our location, and it gets to that customer. So really the customer ends up benefiting because they've got the convenience of being able to shop when the store is not open. But the retailers are trying to figure out that balance of how to blend a straight sale of somebody coming into their building from the street and what drove them there, maybe online.
Mm-hmm. What stores in your mall at North Grand, Ed, would you say are best insulated? It's interesting that you say that, some of these are straddling. They have an online component and they have a mall component. But are there stores you say, wow, that is a good model, a good business model that seems to be resilient against online retail?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a number of them, and part that's mostly based on experiences. So, for example, our cinema is a five-screen cinema, but it's a local owner's, and they're doing extra things that you can't get online, and it makes it worth coming out to the cinema to see that. They've got craft beers, they've got a culinary team in their kitchen that they're starting up a lunch and dinner, so now it's an entertainment venue. Some of the local retailers, like our Closed Cottage or G3 Games, really cater to what feedback we get from the community so that it helps drive that traffic. We have Inside Golf, which is an indoor golf simulator. It's great during the wintertime when the weather's bad. You're not going to go in there maybe and play in a league in the middle of summer. But not only do they do golf, they do soccer and baseball, which appeals to a whole host of other kids. We've got food options where we've got a restaurant called Flame and Skewer, which has been around for over 30 years. People move away from the community. They constantly come back, and it's one of those must go to Flame and Skewer to have that experience again. Mm-hmm. And of course, Health and Beauty, Serenity Culture, the Salon and Spa, Sephora. We've got Transform, which is a massage and spa place. You just can't do those type of things online. But you can go to the mall, have some of those experiences, put your hands on some product from Riddles, K's, American Eagle, Hallmark, and you can determine that, yes, I want to get that. And maybe you do some of that showrooming and you're actually going online and purchasing that item. We hope you don't, because the local economy is really, you know, those workers and those stores are counting on you to come in there and purchase those. But at the end, the bigger retailers are realizing that they're just not buying this thing online. They're 6 miles from North Grand Mall, and they probably went in there, and we're going to have that store be the service point, and that's going to be the contact point for the customer.
Mm-hmm. What I hear from both you and Brian, Ed, and we're about a minute or two away from a break, is that when we look in the future, and back me up here, Ed, and Brian sort of said it as well, what I hear you describing is just the shift to experiential rather than product off the shelf, that you go in because not you're going to grab this off the shelf and purchase it, but because you like to be there and you like the people who are giving you hair tips or whatever, craft beer tips.
Exactly. So one of the things that I encourage people to do is to go to the website, the northgrandmall.com, and sign up for our weekly newsletter, because we specify to try to help guide people into those experiences. So if you sign up for the newsletter, you'll be aware of what's going on. We can help direct things that do come up to your direction, so that it's meeting a need that you as a consumer has.
We've run out of time. Ed Kaiser, thank you very much. Assistant Manager at North Grand Mall in Ames. Brian Mildenstein, you mentioned conservation and all kinds of things where you're active at Fin and Feather. How can people contact Fin and Feather in Iowa City?
Best way is just to give us a call the old traditional way. We're an analog store, but otherwise email contact at finfeather.com.
Okay, very good. Brian Mildenstein of Fin and Feather in Iowa City. Ed Kaiser of the North Grand Mall in Ames. Thank you both. When we come back, I'll talk with Iowa State University economist Dave Swenson. I'd love to have Dave on the show. We'll hear his observations about this trend in retail. Also, we'll find out about how Amazon is expanding here in the Midwest in Iowa from business reporter Catherine Carlin. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. With 6 race events, including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about online retail, its impact on the greater retail landscape. The online sector, referred to as clicks, has been slowly eating up the market share in the past couple of decades. Its total rose from below 5%, that would have been in the late 1990s, to about 12% this year, according to Commerce Department data. In February, we hit a milestone, online sales narrowly beating general merchandising stores, including department stores, warehouse clubs, supercenters. So that was a milestone. For the first time in history, online retailers surpassed the market share of general merchandisers. That's excluding the car sales and restaurant sales. I have to add that there. Wanted to get the view on this from David Swenson. David is an economist at Iowa State University. We love to turn to Dave when we have such topics, and he's in our Ames studio. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What are your observations about this trend towards e-commerce and how it's changing our landscape?
Well, I got several observations. First of all, as you noted, this trend has been going up, and it's been going up persistently for quite a long time. This decade, it's grown from just a little under 5% to, as you said, close to 12%. The numbers I'm looking at are closer to 11%. And the rate of market share increase in e-commerce appears to have shifted slightly upward since about 2014. So not only are we incrementally doing more online shopping, e-commerce activities, our propensity to do it is also increasing, it looks like, in recent years. And it has, as people have commented already on the program, it has had consequences for local retail and or statewide retail. That's simply undeniable. If you are making a sale and that money is going out of state to buy a commodity or an item, and then it's being shipped into here, that's just simply payroll or profit that isn't finding its way into the Iowa economy and having a multiplier effect.
Mm-hmm. So what are the implications there? I was looking at Yahoo Finance here, looking at retail apocalypse as a theme for 2019, with nearly 8,000 store closures in the U.S. so far, according to, this is CoreSite Research that I'm reading, and some big ones going completely belly up, Dressbarn, Claire's, Payless Shoes, some of these very big retail stores.
Okay, the consequences for the United States are a little bit uncertain. First of all, we're always having retail shakeouts. We go through cycle after cycle of retail shakeouts over time, so we have to accept that as part of reality. Retail employment in the United States started to turn down in 2017. It seems to continue to go down. The number of establishments hasn't gone down as much as employment has gone down. So calling it an apocalypse is probably good copy, but it's not necessarily good statistics. Now, if I shift it over to Iowa, though, Iowa's retail performance is distinct from the United States. It's not doing as well as the United States. We have regions of the state that are doing poor. We have other parts of the state that are doing well. One of the statistics I would point out is that in the last 10 years, we've lost about 1,000 establishments that had employees that were engaged in retail activities. Mm. And employment has been going down in Iowa since about August of 2014. So we've been shrinking in our retail sector for quite a time here now. If I look at a 10-year time period, overall, statewide, the metropolitan retail employment is still expanding. It's looking relatively healthy, and that's, those biggest cities are able to continue to draw shoppers into their areas. The non-metropolitan retail establishments, though, in Iowa, given a 10-year time frame, have contracted by about 5%. And so we are seeing not only just in people moving away, but also our propensity to shop also shifting towards metropolitan areas. So we have these dynamics. We have this rural to urban transition, the regional competition for yours and my retail dollar. And then we have this overlay of e-commerce and this big monster, Amazon, that is able to command more and more of our attention. And admittedly, as one of your callers said in the last segment, increase the shopping utility for a lot of people, because yours and my search costs go down to find many of the items that we need. And in general, we conclude that we're better off as a consequence.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's look at it through that consumer lens a little bit more. And you mentioned urban versus rural. A lot of rural people have had in recent years a tough time, traveling many miles to get their needs met, their products and services. Is that changing with e-commerce?
Yes, it is. E-commerce and the reliability of delivery and the scope of commodities or products that are available have actually made life better for many people in rural areas. Now, I'm talking about the retailers in rural areas. I'm talking about the average household in rural areas, in that they're able to obtain items that they need, whether it's for their business or whether it's for their household or whether it's just normal monthly purchases. They're able to obtain these items, many of these items, without having to engage in search costs, driving to the next largest town, if not the next major trade center, to try to find something that they need. So there are benefits to the rural economy because of this now redistribution of retail activity, where it's intercepted electronically and then redistributed and delivered through the transportation sector instead of you and I going down to the store and picking it up.
Mm-hmm. So, brick and mortar stores have lost people. They can't employ as many people. They perhaps have closed down. We have in delivery services a lot of jobs. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we are. We're having an increase in delivery, courier, or local delivery services as part of the trucking or transportation sector. The gains in those jobs, no, are nowhere near as large as the losses in retail jobs. It's just one. It's an offset, but it's not a one-for-one offset.
Mm-hmm.
The retail sectors, we have different sectors in Iowa and nationally, but we have different sectors in Iowa that are really vulnerable to, I think, e-trade. They're vulnerable over time nonetheless, but they're vulnerable to e-trade consequences. And what we've seen, again, I'm thinking of the last decade, the places with the largest declines in employment are electronics and appliance stores, furniture and home furnishing stores, apparel stores and accessories, and you had two examples on the previous segment, sporting goods stores. Those are the areas that have had employment declines in excess of 10%, and one as high as 19%, which is in the furniture and home furnishing stores.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a lot of sectors of the economy, for one reason or another, have been affected, either in terms of how many stores there are, where those stores are, or how many people they employ. How much of that is a consequence of e-commerce versus how much of that is a consequence of just simply the shifting from rural to urban preferences for shopping is something we can't sort out.
Right. I wonder if you can sort out the observation from the two guests beforehand, the retailers here, the mall manager as well, as you know, trying to go for more of an experience, making the mall or your store more of an experience, trying to offer something that we assume online can't or can't yet. Who knows?
Well, you know, I thought that was very, very interesting. You had two dimensions. You had, I think, the fin and feather.
Yes.
Guest really was, you know, long time loyalty to an established firm that has a great heritage in a community. And then you have North Grand Mall, and all malls in the United States are going through, you know, massive changes. Many have closed, many have repurposed, and they're constantly trying to figure out the places that are capable of creating a bundle of shopping experiences and entertainment opportunities are relatively limited. They are the trade centers of the state of Iowa, where people flock to or naturally gravitate to, not only for employment, but they also for shopping, entertainment, the purchases of necessary services. So, you know, we have a few dozen of those in Iowa where those kinds of opportunities make sense. And those kinds of places are also places where they can have diversified, again, shopping and service amenities that cater more to the customer, so that when you go shopping, it's an event more so than just a task or a chore. Other places in the state probably aren't as able to do that, but they may try to do different types of things, whether it's farmers markets or other kinds of craft shows or anything else that latches onto and tries to hold on to the local shopping populace. And then last, there's the other thing that's been going on for decades, but it's still important nonetheless, and that is the degree to which a community can organize not just its households, but its business community around buying local. Buy local efforts. Shop local. Buy your auto parts locally. Buy your services locally.
Will that be a long-term strategy? Is that a long-term
strategy? No, it's a short-term strategy because you're still wrestling with all of those other forces. But what you can do is at least, you know, at least tap into the guilt and the consciousness of your shoppers and try to get them to drop more of their dollars locally. Retail, your retail is a symptom of your broader economy, and so when people say, "Oh, our retail sector is dying," well, that's the last thing. What's going on is the rest of your economy is struggling, and retail is the response. And so when we're looking at retail, you know, and trying to bolster retail, oftentimes it's just too hard because it's the rest of the economy that's contracted such that it is just simply undercut retail so much that it can't recover.
Mm-hmm. Dave Swenson, hang on there. I wanted to get your thoughts on the future, where this is headed. But before we go to that, remind our listeners, you're an economist at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. But before we get back to you with kind of forward-looking thoughts here, Dave, let's go to Catherine Carlin. Catherine is a business reporter at the Corridor Business Journal. The Corridor, for those who don't know, maybe in western or central Iowa, the Corridor is the corridor between Iowa City and Cedar Rapids, North Liberty area. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
This is interesting. You wrote an article a couple weeks ago about Amazon's growth in eastern Iowa. Before we get to that, where is Amazon in Iowa right now?
As far as I know, and I did do quite a bit of research on this, they have one facility in North Liberty that's about 18,000 square feet. And it's one of their smaller fulfillment centers called a delivery center.
Okay, North Liberty. It's really interesting that on recycling day, you can find Amazon boxes on every curbside. And yet, a business reporter, it's a challenge for a business reporter to find out where actually Amazon is.
Correct.
And this is kind of a theme in the article that you wrote here. There was a rumor that set you off. Tell us what the rumor was.
Yeah, we had we kind of like to call them tips in the news business. But yeah, we had gotten several tips that Amazon was sort of poking around the area to put a fulfillment center. And just sort of knowing how notoriously private Amazon is, and it's always difficult to find out about ongoing deals before contracts are signed and T's are crossed and I's dotted. I started with the city of Iowa City because they tend to be very transparent and forthcoming about what's going on, and ended up talking to an economic development official there who told me a pretty interesting story. One day in June, a guy walked into City Hall and identified...
No appointment?
Nothing, as far as I understand.
Yeah.
Identified himself as being from Amazon, and I think there was quickly an impromptu meeting that ensued with economic development officials. I believe the city manager was there, and I think, you know, he was described to me as definitely not a C-suite caliber individual. I think he was some sort of a site location scout and something of that.
A little bit lower down. Or, I mean, when you say C-suite, you mean a little bit lower down in the hierarchy.
Exactly. And just expressing quite a bit of interest in a former Procter & Gamble facility on the east side of Iowa City, a former distribution center. And was really kind of there on a fact-finding mission. You know, he had a lot of interest in the facility, but, you know, wanted to know what sort of hoops Amazon would have to jump through in order to retrofit it for what they call a last-mile delivery center, which is kind of the last stop in the process before packages end up on doorstops.
So what did your research tell you about how this fits into Amazon's grand scheme of, I'll just say it, taking over the world?
It seems like it, doesn't it? Yeah, well, in April, I believe it was, they announced that they were going to one-day shipping for their 100 million Prime customers, which is a huge undertaking to go from 1 to 2 days. And I believe in their second quarter, they spent upwards of $800 million just to roll out this infrastructure. So they're definitely looking nationwide to be putting in lots and lots of these smaller scale delivery centers in order to provide that one-day service.
Deliver those things faster here. Some other interesting things you found out, I think, that Amazon Flex. Tell us what that is. Have you looked into that?
Yes, I have. It's sort of their program. It's sort of based on the Lyft Uber model, where they're hiring just drivers as independent contractors to use their own vehicles and deliver packages. And I think purportedly, you know, from what I've seen, they say that they pay between $18 and $25 an hour, but it is somewhat controversial because these folks are independent contractors. That means they're paying for their own gas, their own oil, their own maintenance, you know, in addition to payroll taxes that they're going to need to be responsible for, insurance.
And as far as delivery, Amazon wants to do its own delivery, developing its own delivery service.
Correct.
Did it break break its relationship with FedEx, for instance?
Yes. Yeah. There was a recent dispute with FedEx, and FedEx has ended its both its ground and air contracts with Amazon. I think their idea is that you know they're going to try to make up that difference with partnerships with Walmart and Target. But it's going to be interesting going into the holiday season to sort of see how that all shakes out.
Right. And even incentivizing employees to start up. Tell us that.
Yeah.
To start up what?
Well, they're actually incentivizing their own employees to quit Amazon and start their own local courier services. And to do that, they're offering them up to $10,000 in startup costs and 3 months of salary. But then again, beyond that point, these folks will be independent contractors. Presumably, it's a little bit better deal than the Amazon Flex situation because they'll have a steady supply of deliveries to make and all of Amazon's, you know, tools and infrastructure at their disposal.
Mm-hmm. Dave Swenson, listening to the Amazon story that Catherine Carlin has researched there for the Corridor Business Journal, what comes to mind for you? What do you think of this rise of Amazon?
Well, the rise of Amazon is, again, it's inexorable. It's something that we can't do much about here in Iowa. It's likely that this year that Amazon exceeds 50% of all e-commerce sales. So even though e-commerce sales are growing at it looks to be increasing rate, Amazon's growth is even greater, so it is something we have to pay attention to. I'm struck by how it can really have an effect on a region. If you think back 25, 30 years ago, just getting a Walmart was such a big deal. Now, mm-hmm. now we're and then we had to figure out how to compete with Walmart in our region. And now we're having to compete with Amazon, which is, it's in the cloud. It's out there. And then we do have, of course, the opportunity for fulfillment centers. But fulfillment centers are something Amazon has to build. They're not doing us a favor by building the centers. They're building these centers because it maximizes their distributional efficiencies. So I don't quite know, other than we're to expect more Amazon in our world. One of the other categories that we should expect more Amazon in our world, too, is one of the fastest growing categories of Amazon services is their Amazon Web Services. Had the most growth last year of all of their activities. And so not only is it
going... So name some of these services. I guess,
well,
I don't.
Well, it's just it's services that they provide to businesses or cloud-based services that mm-hmm. are attached to all of the different things that we do that are cloud-related, whether it's storing pictures or engaging in other kinds of online media. So that's one of the areas also that they're very aggressively moving into as well. We're going to have a lot of Amazon to deal with in the next decade or so.
Mm-hmm. Catherine, as we finish up this program with your research on this article as a business reporter for Corridor Business Journal, what sense did you get of where we're going? I mean, when you have questions that you that came to mind about where we'll be in 5, 10, 20 years, did that sort of ruminate in your mind?
I have to agree with Professor Swenson. I mean, I can't imagine that with this really aggressive rollout that, you know, this is the only center like this that they're looking to put in Iowa. You know, I have to think that they're looking at, you know, existing or new facilities in Cedar Rapids or, you know, the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area in Des Moines as they move to this one-day thing. So, yes, right. I agree we're going to be right. seeing more and more Amazon is
right.
taking over our world.
And larger urban centers have guaranteed like two-hour delivery,
correct.
Now, don't
yeah.
they? Like you press the button on your laying in bed, as our caller was, like to do do his shopping last half hour, and 2 hours later it shows up at your doorstep. Dave Swenson, that's where we're headed when we think about our landscape here in 5-10 years. Will it take that long?
Well, I think so. I think what we see in terms of responsive services in San Francisco, Seattle, and some of the larger places will always have a lag in terms of there being really available broadly in a state like Iowa, where our urban populations and urban concentrations are a little bit more distributed and not concentrated in just one great big area.
Okay. So, and finally, before we leave this conversation, Dave Swenson, where does this leave our retail in our towns, our brick and mortar, the places where we do walk, ride our bikes, drive our cars to, walk in the door, say hello to someone and ask about a product or a service?
Yep. It's going to undercut some. It, no matter what, and that's a pressure that they've been undergoing for decades with their competition with their neighbors. Now they're having a competition with the cloud, this thing that they can't directly confront. So there's going to be probably more losers, and I believe rural rural retailers are in many ways much more vulnerable than urban retailers.
Why is that?
Well, because they don't have they don't have a lot of the efficiencies that urban retailers can capture: economies of scale, dense population demand, other types of things that help maintain their bottom lines. Rural retailers are just more vulnerable.
Okay, Dave Swenson, thank you for your expertise. Dave is an economist at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Thanks for coming in, Dave.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming in as well, Catherine Carlin, business reporter at the Corridor Business Journal. We appreciate your reporting, your research, and sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on our program, make sure you tune in for Politics Day. Jim McCormick and Wayne Moyer, an emphasis on international politics. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.